Welcome to a field version of Software Gone Wild. I'm sitting in Stockholm in the wonderful offices of Spotify, which, in case you don't know it, is the company that brings you music online, sponsored by ads, so you don't have to pay for it. With me is David Barroso, the wizard who works on an interesting project, how to turn a regular layer 3 top of rack switch into an internet-facing SDN router. Some of you may remember David from one of the early podcasts, and for those of you who are lazy and haven't been listening to all of them, you really should, by the way. David, do tell them what you're doing when you're not listening to the Spotify music.
Well, my name is David. I'm a network engineer at Spotify, and well, most of the time I'm trying to hack some network device or just automating my job so I can go to a bar and have beer.
Perfect. What brought you to this crazy idea of building your own internet-facing router?
It was actually two things. First of all, we were deploying in Stockholm some big routers, and I realized that they were very, very expensive for my use case. Basically, we only do transit and peering. We don't really do any fancy stuff like MPLS, QoS, or traffic shaping. So that was like the main motivation. But then I was listening to this Elisa's presentation in, I think it was in Nanook.
It was a Nanook presentation and, by Elisa Yashinska from Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. So she was talking about this monitoring thing that she was doing with PMAC. And I actually thought I could use that to actually build a router that can only do what I need. Because the main problem is that if you are doing like peering, transit, and these things, you need to support the entire routing table. And you need full feeds from your neighbors. And you cannot feed that on any top of the rack switch. So, yeah, well, with PMAC, you can actually try to guess which routes do you really need and then install those instead.
So to rephrase, if you want to use an internet edge router, and you need full connectivity to the whole world because who knows who will want to connect to your website to figure out that they actually can't buy Spotify in their country, like me. Hint, hint. So you need to be able to reach them all. In that case, you need those 500,000 routes that you get from the full BGP feed. But in reality, all your traffic, or 99.9% of all the traffic, goes to what, 10,000 prefixes?
Well, yeah, I was running some experiments with the BGP controller I built to manage this top-of-the-rack switch doing transit. And I found out that with 1,000 prefixes, I could offload 95% of the traffic. Only with 1,000 prefixes.
So 95% of traffic is 1,000 prefixes, and 10,000 is probably 99, right?
Yeah, it was 5,000 was 95%, then 10,000 was 97-98%, and then at 20,000, you got just 99% flatline.
So you, with 20,000 prefixes, you cover your connectivity needs.
Yeah.
And who cares about the 480,000 prefixes from Lower Albania, right?
No, actually, this setup assumes that you have a main upstream provider that sends you only the default route. So if someone from some country that we don't usually serve music tries to connect to me, I will use for that connection my default route, which is coming from my upstream provider. So I only install the prefixes that come from my peers, not from my transit provider, which is on the default.
Ah, so you're only accepting prefixes from peers.
Yep.
And install that. So you are effectively installing the exceptions in your routing table. And you're using the default, which is in the same hardware routing table, to send like the bottom 1% of the traffic to your default transit provider.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's still amazing. I mean, we have to carry 500,000 routes, and it turns out that all you need are 20,000 routes.
Yep.
There have been efforts along this same line of thinking because, you know, many people have realized that same thing in the past. And there have even been these proposals about virtual aggregation, which is the same thing. Mm. So use the default route toward one provider and install the exceptions as routes from that have to be in the routing table. And no one has implemented that, so no vendor got that up and running.
Well, I guess that vendors are the first one that they don't want this to be up and running. They want to sell you like the most expensive ASIC, so you can lower the ASIC to just need like 30,000 prefixes. Well, the revenue will go down probably.
Oh yeah, that's true. 10 gig on a high-end router that can do everything, including shaping and making you coffee, is more expensive than 10 gig on a top-of-rack switch.
Yeah.
So I guess you wanted to replace a high-end router with a top-of-rack switch.
Yeah, I mean, as I said before, we don't need any of the extra fancy features that you have on one of the big routers. I mean, I don't do MPLS on the edge. I don't do QoS. I don't do traffic shaping. I don't do anything. It's just BGP and Vim. So why do I need them? So I just figured out that I could build something smarter and cheaper.
Okay, so you said I want to replace the big fancy router with a 1RU top of rack switch that will give me 1 terabit of bandwidth at the price of 10 gig of bandwidth in a router package.
Yeah, exactly.
But still, you somehow have to influence the route selection process. So you have to first connect to the external BGP feeds. And that's one of the obstacles that people building BGP-based SDN controllers always have. So how do I connect to those external feeds if the eBGP only allows one hop sessions? So somehow I need to make my BGP controller appear directly connected to my peering partners. How do you solve that?
Yeah, what I'm doing is I have this top of the rack switch running BERT. And then with BERT, you can use the selective route download feature. Basically, you can tell to the BGP process which route from your RIP you want to install on the feed. So basically, I'm using that feature. All the BGP routes on my RIP are sent to PMACT, who starts aggregating flows and flow information using the BGP feed. And then I run a Python tool that I built myself to get this data from PMACT. All the BGP prefixes, how much data they are sending, blah, blah. And then I just sort them according to some algorithm that I decided. And I get the top end prefixes using this algorithm. And then I tell back from this tool to BERT, like, please get these prefixes and just install them on the feed. And this is pretty much it.
Well, it sounds exceedingly easy.
Yeah, it's
actually. Why are you the only one doing it?
I don't know. But I mean, it's very, very simple. I mean, BERT configuration is just like 5 extra lines of config, just the ones that you need to filter what you want to install on the kernel, and the Python script that I'm running to get the data from PMACT is just like a couple of 100 lines of code. It's not really that complex.
But coming back to what you said previously, so you said you're running BERT on the top of rack switch. Obviously, that top of rack switch has to be running Linux.
Yep.
And now most of the listeners are probably going like, yeah, the guy is using Humulus.
Well, I'm not.
Okay, so what are you using?
I'm actually using an Arista switch. This was very interesting. This started as a hack week project at Spotify. And I wanted to hack an Arista switch. So I really got quite stubborn on that I wanted to use an Arista switch for this. So I just contacted my SE here in Sweden, which is kind of cool guys. And I told them, yeah, I want to do this. So I would like to install BERT on the switches. And they just put me in contact to some developers in California. And they actually helped me to replace the BGP process in the Arista box with BERT. And
hold on. You replaced the BGP process in Arista EOS with BERT?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's because I just needed that feature, and Arista doesn't have it in their software yet.
No, but just the idea of taking a regular switching vendor software and being able to replace a daemon that you don't like—that's awesome.
Yeah, that was quite cool, and that's why I got so stubborn in that I wanted to build this with Arista, because I really wanted to see how helpful Arista would be and what I could really do with the box. I mean, they are always bragging about that they are very open, that they run Linux, or, well, let's put them to test. And yeah, it was very funny, to be honest, just building the BERT process so I could install it as an extension on the Arista box. And I didn't do it, but actually BMAC and my Python tool, you should be able to run it inside the box. I ran it outside because it was more convenient for me, but actually you could do it inside if you want to.
So you're running BERT daemon inside EOS.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you turned this into some sort of extension.
Yeah, Arista supports, they call it extension, and it's nothing else than just an RPM package that you can install on the box and run it as a, well, as just another service in the switch. And to do that, the only thing you need is just a VM running, it was Fedora, I don't remember which version, but you only need Fedora VM, just compile it for that specific distro and then just install it as any other RPM package on the switch.
So the reason you have to turn that into an extension for EOS is just so you have a packaging mechanism so that you're not manually copying files over to their file system.
Yeah, you have to do that because if you install something manually on the switch, you can do it. It's Linux. You can just compile it, just upload anything you want. But then if you reload the switch, you lose everything. So you need this extension feature to make sure that when it reboots again the switch, you get it again.
So if you want to do, let's say, testing on the switch, you can just copy the files over. You don't have to build an RPM and install the RPM. Yes. But if you want to make it persistent, then you better follow the proper rules and properly package everything and so on.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. So you made this package, and now BERT is running on Arista EOS. And you just solved that problem that I was mentioning before, because now you're running BGP process on the switch itself. So it is one hop away from your peering partners, because it's replacing the regular BGP process.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, PMAC, who is getting the feed, he sees all the BGP prefixes. And PMAC doesn't really care about the next hop. He's seen my BERT process as the next hop, but he doesn't really care about that. I mean, what I care is just the prefix itself, so I know how to aggregate the flows that I'm getting. So that's not really a problem for my use case. I just want to compile a list of prefixes that will offload traffic from my transit provider to my peers.
Okay, so moving forward, you have the BERT running, you have the full 500,000 entry BGP table, and that daemon. You send that to PMHTT, as Paolo would say.
Yeah. PMAX.
Whatever. If you guys don't know what PMHTT is, you should go and listen to the podcast, the NetFlow tool with the unpronounceable name.
Yeah.
That was an hour-long discussion with Paolo about his tool. So go and listen to that one. Okay. So you collect the full BGP table in PM, whatever. And you get the NetFlow data, and then you get the top N prefixes, and then you have to send that back to BERT. How's that done?
That's the Python script that I built, just compiles the prefix list in BERT format and just uploads the file to the Arista switch in this case, and then it connects to the switch just to reload the BERT process.
But if you reload the BERT process, don't you lose the BGP sessions?
No, it does a soft reload.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So you don't restart the BGP session.
On the other hand, now that you mentioned, the Python script is modifying BERT configuration file.
Exactly.
Which means, I mean, it's obvious, but let's point this out anyway, that you cannot configure BERT in the same way that you would configure BGP daemon on EOS.
No. I mean, the BGP daemon on EOS, you could just configure it with the Arista EAPI. This is, I mean, you have to go to the Linux to do this.
Yeah.
You gotta replace it.
So you lose the configuration capability. You have to manage in a different configuration file using maybe different REST API if you want to write that. But on the other hand, you get the daemon that you want.
Yeah.
And if you want to change the configuration, you probably have to edit the configuration file and do a soft reload. You can't just connect to that daemon and issue CLI commands like you could on the Arista box.
I'm not sure you can actually do that with Bert, but I wouldn't do it. I mean, I'm replacing like 10,000 or 20,000 prefixes. So I think it, uploading a file and doing a soft reload is easier.
Yeah, and also, if you are, now that we are on an SDN and network automation show, if you are a network automation freak, you could actually build that config file with Ansible or something and then just upload it with SSH and reload the daemon and you're done.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't really need to get that complex, like, I mean, supporting Ansible for this because it's a very specific use case, so it's just easy to compile the prefix list and just upload it. But yeah, you could do it with
Ansible. No, I'm thinking about more generic use cases where you would actually implement whatever daemon of yours on something like Arista.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so you have this BGP daemon and you select the prefixes and you have the Python script and you generate the config file and you reload the daemon. And now the daemon knows which BGP prefixes should go into the forwarding table. But the daemon is a regular Linux daemon running on a Linux server. It thinks it's on a Linux server. And effectively, it's running on an Arista switch, which is using hardware forwarding, be it TCAM or whatever, to actually forward the packets. So how do you glue those two things together?
Arista has this service calling inside the Arista switch, which is like the core of the entire switch, which they call it sysdb. And sysdb is who handles all the routing, all the services, the ASICs, everything. So basically, BERT will install the prefixes in the Linux kernel, but that's not really the ASICs. So sysdb has a process that reads everything that happens in the Linux kernel and tries to translate it to sysdb. So basically, it will read those prefixes in the Linux kernel and install them on the ASICs. So it's done automatically. You don't really have to do anything.
And how would that interact with other routing processes? For example, you're running OSPF or maybe ISIS on that same box. And for whatever weird reason that could never happen, you get the same prefix from BGP and from OSPF. How would that thing merge together? Is OSPF also using the Linux routing table to copy the routes to TCAM?
No, not really. When they are installed on the FIP, they are marked as protocol, how are they marked? I don't remember. But they are actually marked in some way to differentiate them from their own processes. So it's just like running RIP and OSPF on the same switch. You have your administrative instance and you have to play with it to make sure that you are preferring one or the other. So it's not differently that different than using two different routing protocols.
So let's say the OSPF daemon on Arista would also work through the same mechanism that you're using.
Yeah, they will just have a different mark of the protocol just to differentiate the prefixes. But yeah, everything works.
Yeah, but they would also insert the routes in the kernel forwarding table first, and then sysdb would copy them down to the TCAM.
I'm not sure if it's done in that order, to be honest. I'm not sure if they will do it on the Linux kernel, and then this process will install it on the FIP, or if it's the other way around. But you will see those prefixes for sure on the Linux kernel also.
So they appear in the Linux kernel regardless of how they get there.
Yeah, you will see if you do IP route, you will see the prefix, then it will say proto OSPF or proto BERT, proto static, whatever.
So you can implement whatever routing mechanism you wish in combination with whatever daemon they have, and you will always get consistent results.
Yeah, you could even have your own script running on the Arista switch, just installing static routes. They will just appear on the...
Yeah, for example. So they're doing the same thing that Cumulus is so proud of, where they take the Linux data structure and copy them to TCAM.
Yeah.
And they've been doing this for I don't know how many years, and now we are supposed to believe that this is revolutionary, right?
Well, it's marketing.
Yeah, well, I mean, just putting things in perspective.
Yeah.
Oh, another crazy question. Why didn't you do this with OpenFlow?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. First of all, it's the TCAM limitation. I mean, if I'm using just the LPM table, which means that I can get on Trident 2 up to 32K prefixes?
Yeah, whatever the current limitation is, but if tens of thousands, yeah.
Yeah, if you use OpenFlow, you go down to a couple of thousand. That was one of the reasons. And the second reason was simplicity. If I'm running OpenFlow, I would need to build my controller would have to take care of the next hop. Like, is it available? Is it retrieving some prefixes? So I would have to do everything myself. Instead, by using just BGP and influencing BGP, I don't have to deal with anything. I mean, if my peer suddenly removes a prefix, it will just disappear from the RIP, so it will disappear from the FIP also. If that peer goes down, everything will be handled automatically. So it was just for simplicity.
So you just said, well, I don't want to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not an academic, so I'll take what works and I'll modify the last 3% so that I get the results that I need.
Yeah, I just needed something working and this worked, so yeah. I make it complex.
Perfect. Now the final technical detail I just popped into my mind. Can you use BFD with the bird daemon to detect neighbor failures quicker?
I haven't explored that path yet, basically because service providers usually don't want to configure BFD with customers. So I'm not sure if that would be possible.
Okay, so that answers the question. Even though you could potentially get it up and running somehow, you couldn't persuade the service provider anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I tried and they told me, yeah, well, we don't support BFD with customers, so I didn't really explore that path for that reason. But I guess that you could do it, not sure. I don't know if BFD supports BFD. I think they do.
Well, Arista, I think they have BFD. It's just a question of whether you could tie that into Bird.
Well, you could do it, but it would probably get a bit complex. I cannot talk about that.
Just write your own BFD daemon.
Yeah, I think that BFD is supported on Bird. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, you don't really need to do anything. Just enable it on the Bird process.
Yeah, the only problem you might get is if you also want to run BFD on the Arista box, there would be two daemons listening to the same port. So who knows what would happen there.
Yeah, but for this particular use case, I mean, I have at least a dedicated box, which is, I call it the BGP edge. So it's just doing that. It's just peering with my transit provider, with my peers, and then with my data center, so I don't really need any other protocol running there.
So when will you put this in production?
We will probably do it. I mean, I've been running this in the what I call the simulation mode, which is basically is getting real data and the real BGP feed that I have in my data center in Stockholm. But I'm not actually modifying the router. So it's just collecting data. Yeah, I would add these prefixes. I would remove these ones. This is the amount of data that I would be offloading because I can actually calculate that, but it's not changing anything. But I will probably try in a couple of months because we are doing a new deployment in the UK, so we'll probably try it there.
Well, so in half a year, we'll do another podcast and you'll tell me whether it succeeded or you burned down.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, previously you mentioned something that I sort of glossed over. You said you were doing Hug Switch project.
Hugwick. You mean Hugwick?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So, yeah. Well, that's actually quite cool.
So what's that?
At Spotify, every 6 months. Yeah, it's every 6 months. We do this Hugwick. And this is just a week where all the employees can just do whatever they want in the office. So people just try their things and I decided to try this, and this is how it started, actually. But, yeah, I mean, people was in the office doing all sorts of projects. Some guys were putting even, like, some automatic score tracker for the football table. So anything you want, you can just do it that week.
So every 6 months, you get a week to play.
Yeah, and some people do things just for fun, and some others do it for fun, but that it actually turns out into something useful. I mean, you can do anything you want. Like, the company will tell you don't do this or do this. It's a week that just be yourself and have fun.
That's awesome. And I've seen your offices, so I can tell anyone, if you guys are willing to come to gloomy winter Sweden, because honestly, they only have 4 hours or so of daylight in December.
Yeah.
But someone told me it's overcompensated in summer when you can't sleep because the sun is always up.
Yeah, that's true.
So if anyone wants to come to wonderful Sweden and work at Spotify, how can they get in touch with you or whoever it is that they should get in touch with?
Well, I guess that you can check, and I'm pretty sure that if you follow Spotify and LinkedIn, you will get like information regarding job positions. And I think that the URL is spotify.com/jobs. There are also a lot of openings there, so I'm sure there are a lot of ways of trying.
Just for our regular audience, are you looking for any networking engineers?
Not right now.
Too bad.
But not right now means that not today, but it might be that we're looking tomorrow. I mean, Spotify is growing very fast. When I joined the team a year ago, I was the 4th engineer, and now we are 8. So just apply if you're a network engineer that you think that you would like being here and so, because, yeah, we are growing fast.
So you've heard him. Go to Spotify.com and just tell them that you want to work in this networking team. And who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway, if people want to get in touch with you and ask you about this project of yours, or maybe even ask you for advice or source code or anything along those lines, how could they reach you?
You can write me at dbarroso@spotify.com. That's dbarroso. And I'm also planning to open source this BGP controller. Hopefully it will be by the end of the week. So I guess it will be open source before you publish this.
Oh, podcast. If it's by the end of the week, then it will definitely be before I publish this.
Yeah. So hopefully I will be able to give you the link so you can publish it on there.
Yeah. And I'll put in the show notes so people will be able to download that.
Yeah, exactly. I don't usually blog, so I'm sorry for that. I don't have time.
Well, I totally know how that is. I had to decide to make blogging my full-time job. That's the only reason I can write a blog a day.
Yeah, it's quite time-consuming.
It is. So thanks for being with me, and thanks for inviting me to your SDN meetup, which is the reason why I'm sitting in Stockholm. It's not that I love traveling around.
No, thank you for coming to my meetup.
And just in case you stumbled upon this podcast by accident, I'm Ivan Pepelniak, and I'm usually blogging at ipspace.net, where you'll also find this podcast and the show notes and everything that goes with it. If you're interested in SDN, and I guess you are, otherwise you wouldn't be listening to this thing, go to ipspace.net/SDN, which is my SDN resources page, where you'll find links to workshops, webinars, books, recordings, who knows what else. And if you can't decide what to use out of that, well, just go for the yearly subscription. It gives you access to everything that's on my website and everything else I will produce in a year. Thank you for being with us. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast feed so that you get all the new episodes automatically. Oh, and finally, do your job. Go to iTunes, review the podcast, and give us a 5-star review so that people know what to listen to.